What's up, bottleneck?
Anyway, we had a little conversation before we started recording, and we didn't have a good way to get from that conversation to recording. So we're recording. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Nice vacation. Whoever called last week's vacation, thank you.
That was me. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know, Wednesday morning was kind of like, I just do not feel like doing this today. No offense to you guys. Yeah. It was more like sitting down and having to think about one thing for a little while. I was all over the place and behind and stuff like that. So anyway, thank you. Yeah,
I'm so good. What's going on? It seems like my neighbor stopped going in reverse for a couple minutes. So if you hear the beeping, I'll try and mute.
Yeah.
But no, I've been good. I just was telling you guys, I had a huge job with Ryan. Ryan's the guy that lives in my house. He shares my shop with me from time to time, but he's never wants to be on camera, so nobody knows him. But Ryan is a very good designer, builds stuff, and he got into this trade show business with a guy that he randomly met, and this guy keeps sending him work, and he does a lot of it. Occasionally, he enlists me to help him, and it was last Monday. He says, hey, can you help me till Wednesday? I said, sure. And I helped him. I didn't have too much going on as far as videos or projects. And Wednesday came and we weren't even like 25% done with what needed to be done. And we're going to talk about bottlenecks. That should be this person's middle name, but we'll get to that in a minute. So the whole reason then the job started getting late and the first truck that was picking it up had to get canceled. And then there was a second truck that had to be canceled like late last week, like around Friday. And then he says, okay, we have till Monday. The truck is coming Monday. There was so much to do. And it was all through his brain because I didn't book the job. I didn't design the job. I didn't do anything. All I'm doing is helping him engineer small aspects of the job and assemble it. But assembling it means has to be perfect, can't scratch the paint, can't break the plastic, you know, all these very slow details have to be. So I was doing that all week. And in between all of that, I was able to eke out the journal video that I did, which is a little bit of a repeat, but I thought I could bring something new to it. But this could be a topic in general. How many videos can we repeat? When we finally run out of ideas, of course, we have to start repeating things.
The only reason we can't repeat is because we put that own rule on ourselves.
Absolutely. Right.
Nobody else really cares.
Yeah. So nobody complained at all in this last video, but as a matter of fact, the loyal fan said, oh, I remember that video. That was great. This is kind of a nice update to see the similar but different approach with different tools, maybe some new techniques and new environment. So I updated that video and that was good. It was a good one. And there was a simple video for me to do. So I was able to eke out and take breaks from what I was doing with Ryan and go back and forth. But we finally got the truck packed on Monday night at midnight. And to put things in perspective, the truck showed up at 2:30.
Who?
Ryan gave him a couple $100 and said, if you don't mind waiting for us, he goes, I don't mind. And the guy sat in his truck from 2:30, 3 o'clock until midnight. The guy was so nice, so pleasant. He didn't care. He's like, I have to be in California next week, so whatever it takes. This trade show is in March.
Dang.
So, but the schedule was a little, I don't know. Anyway, it's out of my life. It's out of my life.
Going back to the notebooks, I don't know if I remember the first video. What was the difference between the two?
Well, the first one was
the second one better.
Yeah, the first one was full on assembling with like traditional bookbinding techniques, and it was a silent video because going back to 2018 when I did that video is when I never spoke about anything ever unless it was behind a paywall, and so now I only do videos that are I only do voiceover videos now because it's just, there's just so much more information to share. So this one was a voiceover video and I found a traditional bookbind with a book body that I bought. So I didn't have to do all the pages, but also all the books most of them were moleskin. So it's basically making a leather cover for the moleskin. Hmm. So I was really just focusing on making the leather cover and just how to do two different types of impressions, like where the one I'm showing you is the skull. It's just pressed in. And this one is the whole background's pressed in. So the letters are bumped up So just talking about the different techniques. And and then in that, there was a few CNC tips. I have a few CNC tips video formulating. I'm going to be doing that soon. And so I gave a couple of those tips away in that video, but I got about 10 or 12 CNC tips that I'm going to do in a traditional Duresta style tips video with the cats and stuff.
Nice. Are there going to be hold down techniques in there?
Yeah, I have the simplest hold down technique. It's a screw. That's all it is. Screws. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Now, there's a couple of others.
Yeah. For me, the CNC, the biggest, the hardest part is the hold down. And there are plenty of videos like do it this way or have the rails or screw it down or do the masking tape with CA glue trick. And it seems like each thing that I do requires a special way to hold it down. And if it comes loose at all, the whole piece gets ruined.
I just drill holes in corners and inconspicuous corners and just screw it to the table. What I usually do is, and this is part of the tip, is I put down on top of my spoil board, which is the one that'll always be with the machine unless you do the drastic changeover and make it again. I try and keep that spoil board pretty good. And if any projects we do that are small or within limits, I'll put down another spoil board of a piece of scrap. I'll screw that to the table or clamp that down or glue it down or whatever. And then into that spoil board, I could fill it full of screw holes and I don't care. I can let that get cut through. So I always have a spoil board on my spoil board. That's a temporary one. And on top of that, I screw into it or whatever I need to do, hot glue, whatever.
So it's the simplest things that make the, like, I wouldn't have thought to put a spoil board on top of my spoil board because
you leave these scars and dents and scratches.
You can see all my past projects. Yeah.
And you're like, oh God, I can't believe. And then sometimes you watch someone's video and you just see like every single project they ever did is cut into the table. And you're like, how do you live like that? How do you change your underwear? How do you live like that?
I immediately thought of Pimp My Ride. Because you were like, hey, I heard you like spoil board. So we put a spoil board on your spoil board.
What's up, exhibit?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I do.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward, even though I don't use the CNC these days, I haven't in a very long time. I am looking forward to your tips video because I think the other day I had an idea for a CNC project or a piece of something. And I was like, oh, hey, there's an idea. And I don't even know what it was. I didn't write it down. I have no idea what it was attached to, so it's gone. So maybe your tips video will help me remember.
Got to make yourself a moleskin journal.
Hmm. I believe is every time you hit a certain milestone, you would do a tips video or some sort of like compilation of.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I would do a collections video at every 100,000. But
yeah,
can't seem to break that barrier.
So good. Because, and I am so guilty of this, because your videos, those tip videos, it's just dense with information and there's no YouTuberiness of it. There's no like, you're not going to believe number 10, you know, and it's just you and you're just going through all your tips and it's just all really good information.
Thank you.
And anybody else who does a compilation of tips videos, not anybody, but I would say anything that shows up in my feed, it's just all YouTubery and it's so gross these days. Yeah. Yeah.
My tips video on my bandsaw constantly gets you can always tell activity. We can always tell activity when you get comments referenced a lot in your email. And every day I get comments on my bandsaw video where I did 9 bandsaw tips or 9 mistakes everybody makes. Drew helped me come up with that name. And 9 bandsaw mistakes everybody makes. And then I just did a tips video. I didn't even do 9 things. That was just the title of the video. It doesn't really correlate to the thing. But I did talk about some of the mistakes. But it was a tips video on the bandsaw. And a lot of people reference that. It's probably one of my most successful tips videos. So been thinking about one on the table saw. Even though I did a table saw video years ago, I'm thinking about doing a new one. And CNC is probably going to be my next one. The CNC one's going to be part of this is going to be part of a CNC symposium that's taking place in April. So the tips video is going to go through them first, and then I'll release it on my channel a couple weeks later. But I'm doing it for that event. But then it will be released. So, and then patrons will always see everything early.
I'm also making a video for that event.
Oh yeah, I saw your name in the lineup. Yeah, that's great. The lineup went from being, when I got the thing and I saw your name, I'm like, Dave's coming to the event? I couldn't
I'm not
you.
Going to the event. I'm making a video for the event.
He's like, what, are you crazy?
No, well, no one's going now. They went from being in person to being... You might have always been now? You might have always been remote, but yeah, I was scheduled to be there. It's a 2 or 3 day event down in Jersey, and there was going to be some live panels, but they switched it. I don't know why, but they said now everything is remote, so that's good. So I don't have to go down. Hey, cool. What are you going to do a video for that? What is it going to be, a CNC tips video or instructional video?
It's going to be how to get real world textures. Onto your board, so you could like take a photo of a brick wall or
any texture, you did that.
And then CNC that. Yeah, I did it quickly in a video a while ago, and I used a 3D printer to create the texture. But for this, I'm going to use the CNC.
I need to learn that. Why would I do that?
Cool.
Yep.
Well, David, what have you been working on?
I've got a couple videos. The video coming out this weekend is it's a different style of video for me. It's kind of vlog-ish, but it has value. It's just me cleaning out, getting rid of the tools that I don't need anymore. And so I'm just going, like, I have duplicates of so many tools, drills, angle grinders. I have tools that are like the Shaper Origin I've had for a long time. I paid for it and I don't use it. So I'm kind of going through and just getting rid of tools that I don't need anymore, jigs that I don't need, half started projects or project ideas that I've just been collecting on a shelf and just kind of getting rid of it. So it's kind of like a video about letting go. And there's little stories about why I bought this particular thing and then decided to ditch it. Because everything is just taking up space. I've run out of space in my brain and in my shop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it was, we're also working on a build video at the same time. And this was supposed to be a quick 1 day video so I can have more time to do the build video because of sponsor obligations. And man, I care too much. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, like we shot for a whole day. We shot the video and I started piecing it together. And I was like, it's not right. It just feels like a dude cleaning his shop. Nobody wants to watch a dude throw out tools. And so like we had to go back and reshoot and say why I got this or why I got rid of this and like, work up. Yeah. I have to work up to like the big tool that I'm getting rid of. So I had to go and rework. It was supposed to be 1 day shoot, edit, and it turns out to be a 3 day video. And so now I'm behind on the other video that I'm working on where we're taking a cheap Amazon alarm clock. And it looks like something from 1985 that they still sell on Amazon. And I'm gutting it and remaking it in Pachuto style. So that video will be out in 2 weeks, probably the last day of the month because it's supposed to be within February, so that video is coming out on February 28th.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, that's cool. Well, I've been doing less lately. I feel like I've been stuck on things, waiting on things. I'm not really behind, I don't think, but I don't know. I ran into some. I was working on siding for the pool house. And ran into a situation where there was these two trim pieces that I had to put in for the literal last piece of siding. Like the last piece would slide into a trim piece that was hidden to hold it in place. And so this trim piece, I did not buy enough of, and it was all custom order stuff. Well, it's not things you could get at the store locally. So I had to, on February 5th, today is the 18th. On the 5th, I ordered these things and it said they would be here like, I don't know, 7 days or 9 days or something after that. And so that day came and went and I finally called the company and I was just waiting around. Like there are literally two pieces of siding left to do on this building to finish it. And I called them and they were like, oh yeah, it hadn't shipped yet. It'll probably go out tomorrow. Like days after it was supposed to already arrive. Anyway, it ended up showing up very quickly after I called. And so then I was able to finish the whole thing and then get that video wrapped up so that you know, it could start being edited. But it was a weird little gap of time where I thought I was just going to be able to finish this thing, and then I just got stuck, and there was literally nothing I could do to make it happen faster. There was no workaround. There was no, you know, I just had to wait. And so I ended up doing just other stuff around, trying to tidy up the shop and get rid of some stuff. And so it was fine. It worked out fine, but it felt like I lost a week in, you know, like moving forward. But anyway, so I did that. And so the pool house now is completely covered. It's got siding all the way around it. It's got trim all the way around it. It's got roof. It's got soffit. It's got, you know, it's like,
it looks,
I guess,
nice.
Done. Thank you.
It looks really nice.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, and it came out beautiful.
There's a weird little bit of me. I was thinking about it this morning. There's a weird bit of me that's like, aw, you know,
that's
it's like, we're done. It's kind of done. I mean, it's not done. I mean, there's still like, I have to order all the gutters and figure out how to put gutters on a thing and downspouts. I'm going to make a screen for the front of the side that where all the pool equipment is to cover all that stuff up. There's electrical, you know, put lights on the outside of it. And then there's the inside, and I have not done anything to the inside of it. So it's not finished. But as far as it being like a, you know, it's not safe yet. It's not done yet. It's not dry yet. It's all that whole thing. It kind of is. So there's a little bit of disappointment in that. Just, you know, this project I've been working on since June is now over, or, you know, at a
it's
stage
going off
where
to college.
It's like, yeah, pretty much.
You're still
going
to see it.
Yeah.
But just not as much.
Not as much. That's right. Yeah, so that's cool, but also kind of weird. But and it's now kind of helping me turn my attention to other things in the future, stuff that I've been thinking at a distance about, and now I have to start actually thinking about them. One of those things is, so I went out to the farm yesterday and got this piece of metal, and this is a weird little triangle bracket that I had to take out when I was redoing the front end of the Ghia body. So I had to, this goes in between a structural part and the front part, and it just keeps them in place. So I took this out and I was like, I don't know what this is called. So I'm going to take it out, keep it, and make sure that I can find a replacement for it. Well, it turns out I can't find a replacement for it because I can't find a reference to it because I can't find a name for it. So I'm just going to remake my own. It's pretty simple. I mean, it's a flat triangle with two folded up edges that fits in a gap. But so thinking through this, I'm like, well, you know, I could literally cut this out with an angle grinder and then use a break to fold the edges up, and it would be done like by hand, 20 minutes, it's good to go. Or I could make it way overly complicated and figure out how to do something else. So obviously that's what I'm going to do.
That's the right way, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm in the process now of 3D printing metal dies so that I can take a flat piece of this and press it to get these folds and everything. Because actually they're not 90 degree folds. One of them is, and the other one's at 20 degrees or 70 degrees, depending on how you're looking at it. So yeah, I'm going down that road, and that has been really interesting. Yesterday I modeled this in Fusion with the sheet metal tool so I could replicate the bends and lay it out flat after I had the shape. And then from there I started trying to model an inside, like a positive and then a negative. And that turned out to be way more complicated than I was expecting. It was like, oh, it'll be easy. You have the shape, and then you just like put something here, put something there. And then when you print those two things out, you'll have the thing. Nope. Way more complicated. And it took me a good 2 hours to like model it several times and go like, no, if I go down this path, I end up in the wrong spot. So if I go down this path, I end up in the wrong spot. And eventually I found a way to get the thing that I was trying to get to, and it's on the printer now, the first draft, which I'm sure will not be right, but you know, yeah.
Can I say how I would do it and then tell me why that won't work?
Yes.
So for me in Fusion, I would think, I would just, you have the model of the thing that you want to make, and then you just put that in a big block, and then you subtract that from the block, and then you have the two pieces, right?
That's what I thought. And that would work better if this had a flange on three sides. So for people who can't see this, I'm holding a flat triangle with a folded up flange on two sides, and the third side does not have a flange. So if you were to cut this out of a piece of a block, there's nothing here to separate the top and the bottom from.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know exactly how to explain it. But also, all of these overhangs where you have these pieces that fold over need to have negative space below them in case when they fold, they don't fold exactly the same as this original piece.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a way for the positive and the negative to fit together in a way that's compressible. So you have to have one fit into the other, but line itself up and also end up being at the same height once they're pressed, taking into account the thickness of the metal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the same thing because I was like, oh, it'll be easy. You just like take a block, cut this. I know, Jimmy, hang on. And you cut it out. But it's not that, mainly because of like the rolling and then that one flange not being there. I just had to think through it differently. So, yes, Jimmy.
If I was going to approach that, the first thing I would assume is that it would just have to be stamped, oversized, and then cut back to shape. So you'd end up with a flange that's the bottom, the sides, and then the waist. So you'd end up with, it would look like the piece was stamped right in the middle of a sheet, and then with an angle grinder or a bandsaw, you cut it off and then adjust it to the shape that you finally need, versus having the piece cut and then stretched into shape. That would be if you made thousands and you didn't have time to recut them. But if you're only making one, I would overstamp it. But if you're in production, you really do have to figure it out the way you're talking about it, which is like get the cut piece, stick it in the jig, and then it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I could have just done this by hand and it would have been way easier. And I'm making the point in the video that that's obviously that would be the way to do it if you need, I need two of these. I need one this way.
This is totally a Bob video.
And
this
one, oh, yeah,
problem solving. Yeah, I love it.
So I only need two of them and they're mirrored of each other. And so that would be the easier way to do it, but I'm just trying to learn how to do a new thing. And so this was one of the justifications for me getting the new Formlabs printer is that I could print the jig or the die pieces in like a rigid 10K material that's like super hard and made for this type of stuff. Shane from Stuff Made Here has done this with that same material. And so I watched his video on how he did it. And he's using a more complicated part with like holes in it with the radiuses that have to be pressed into it. It's like way more complicated. So I'm doing the simpler version of the path he went down. But it's anyway, all that to say, I'm in the very beginning of trying to figure this out. And I said in the video, and I thought this earlier when you were talking, David, that when I first started this, it felt like it was going to be really easy, which knowing myself means that I don't have a complete understanding of what it is I'm trying to accomplish. That's what that means. Like, and I know that now about myself, that if I think something's easy, that means I don't understand it well enough. So
maybe that's our topic then. Because you think something's easy and then there is always the little roadblock. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So I've got the first print coming off and then I'll test it out today.
You can tell me to wait and watch the video if you don't want to spoil anything, but I have a couple of questions. Could I do that with my, with a filament printer? Would I be able to make that hard enough? Would I need to think about different materials or infill?
I mean, you would have to print something 100% solid and on a FDM printer. And even then, it would probably have a lot to do with like the layer orientation. Cause obviously if you put them in a way where they can, when the pressure can push them apart, then they're going to splinter. So you would have to do the layers in compression. And even then I don't know because of the geometry. Mm. So like you think about this one, the negative that goes underneath it is going to have an arm that comes up. It's going to have a wall that comes up and that wall is going to want to compress when you press it down. And if it's got room to go out, then it will try to go out and explode basically off the side of it. Because of those layer lines, they're weak points at every single layer. And so I would imagine there's just more opportunity for it to explode out. But I don't know because I've never done this. So,
and I don't know anything about dies. Can the ends be at a 90 degree, or does there have to be a slight angle for that die to work?
There should be a slight angle because, and actually, apparently it should be over angled because steel, I'm doing steel spring for back. This. It's going to have spring back, right? So you're supposed to over angle, you know, to try to bend it out, knowing that it's going to come back a little bit. This piece in particular doesn't really matter. It's on the inside underneath other panels, and it's a bracket to stop things from flexing. So it doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't matter if I have to like finagle it a little bit and bend it into the thing when I weld it in place. So I'm not super worried about getting those angles 100% exact. Also, the fact that I removed and replaced both of the pieces that this was supposed to connect. So there's a very real possibility that the thing I need is not this. it's something else, but you know, I held this in place to my new metal and it worked. And so I'm just kind of going with that. Anyway, I'm at the beginning of this process and I really don't know what I'm doing. So
my final question is are you using like a hydraulic press or what do you use? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've got like a 20 ton Harbor Freight press.
Okay.
My plan is to use that. And I've actually got a metal brake attachment for it that is pretty stout, but it is like it's not a brake. I don't know exactly what you call it.
It's like a press brake where you push into a corner.
Yeah. It has like a 90 degree corner and then like a wedge.
A press brake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so theoretically I could probably do this with that by itself. That's boring though, you know?
Like I want to figure out something. You're setting yourself up because you could do this in the future with more complicated pieces. So why not learn on this little thing? That's why I keep asking questions, because like I want to be able to do that. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to the video.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. There's another piece. If this works out well and is easy, there's another more complicated piece that I would like to figure out how to do. And it's like, you know how when you have a piece of sheet metal and you need to add structure to it, you can add a bead, right? You can get a bead roller and like it makes a little bead inside the metal to stop it from being able to bend. And so there's this other bracket that is it's a U-shaped bracket, and there are beads on both of the uprights of the U, and there are folds at the bottom of the U. So I would have to make it flat, press the beads into it, and then use a brake to fold it up into the U shape. And that would be multiple steps, a lot more thinking and planning and complicated. But if
I'm going to compress the bead when you put it in the brake, though,
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think so, because I mean, they're like centered in the uprights of the U.
Okay.
And the brake is at there's a gap between, I don't know. Like I said, I want to do the simple thing first.
Right.
We'll go from there.
That's cool. But
so anyway, those are the things that I'm working on right now. And then I'm planning and modeling another future aquarium project. I think I told you guys about it off. Mm-hmm. If not, we can talk about it in the after show. But that's actually going pretty well. But that's for like April. So
we need a term for this. Maybe this is called hobby creep, where the thing that was supposed to be personal is now creeping into the business.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a problem. Or actually, I like to look at it the other way. I'm figuring out ways to justify business expenses for my hobbies.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. But so we were talking earlier before we started recording about how, David, you were working on one thing. It was supposed to be quick to try to buy you some time to work on the next thing. So, I think that's something that we all run into on a regular basis, especially with like the YouTube pace, whatever that pace is for each individual. Like you're still on some sort of a release schedule and you're trying to do something so that you have time to do the next thing and you're always trying to build in a little bit of margin so you have more time to think longer and design better. But you're like kind of in that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any thoughts or like anything about that you want to talk about?
It's my perfection getting in the way of progress. This is classic. I think anybody who's creative has to deal with this, but, I want everything that I do to have meaning. I don't want to make a video, or I don't want to make a thing just because that's what I do for a living. I want to make a thing because it means something to me, and I'm hoping that people will watch the video, will get value out of that. That's the thing that's really important to me. And I made, you know, this quicker video, and I'm watching it back, and I'm like, it doesn't have value yet. It's not done because it didn't meet my own expectations. So let's go back and redo it, and let's make sure that somebody could get something out of this. And I just do this constantly, like I'm also working on the alarm clock recasing, and I need to get. I never work with iterations. I never work with prototypes. It's usually whatever I build is the thing. And this time I'm like, I need to quickly get something together so I can understand the workings and the inside of this. So then I can tear it apart and do it again and make it quote unquote perfect. But I find myself even making the first version. There's a part of me that's like, you know, this first version might be the version you should really put time and care into it. What I really should be doing is just getting around the problems that I need to work with.
I have an idea. So what if in that moment, like that little thing right there that you're talking about where you're like, this one could be the one. I could just go ahead and like sand this a little bit more and put whatever. What if you intentionally made your prototype or your figuring out thing with crappy material, or like you spray painted your plywood orange? I cannot use this as the final.
Mm-hmm.
I'm deciding ahead of time that I'm ruining the opportunity for this to be the final version to like,
it's like
stop yourself from trying to feel that way.
That's actually, that's pretty good. Also, I think that makes for a good like storytelling video. You're like, okay, I'm purposely doing this so we can learn. It's that wreck this journal theory, right?
Oh yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And another thing about that is like, you know, what if in the future for some other thing, what if the prototype is the video? The video is you stumbling through, figuring out, redoing whatever, overcoming the ugly. And then, okay, I did that. Now you saw the process. Now here's the final thing. And then that gives you the freedom to like not have to film your final revised, refined. Yeah. Thing you get to explore on camera and then go away, do your art, and then be like, all of this exploration led to this.
Mm-hmm.
This is my final thing. I don't know if that's a freedom that you would want, or if that's a freedom that, you know, gets in the way of the showing off the art of it.
Huh. Yeah, that's an interesting way to approach that, just to junk it right away. So,
Yesterday I spent the day improvising, not the whole day, but on and off. I came up with this idea during our Valentine's Day dinner. Rachel and I were talking about a new bag, a leather bag idea, and I had a couple of ideas. And then I went home, and I think on Sunday, in between the rush of working with Ryan, I cut out a little cardboard idea, glued it up. Monday, I found a few minutes, went to the computer, did a pattern. Yesterday, I had a free day because the project was done. I laser cut a cardboard one, folded it up, adjusted it on the file, cut a second one, adjusted it, cut a third one, adjusted it. Then I went to three leather ones. So that was all on and off throughout the day, just cutting one. And then when I fold the leather up, sometimes before I put a rivet in it, I'll glue it. So I put a clamp on it and then walk away. And then last evening, I put all three leather ones together, and I found out the design isn't that great, or at least and at one point I was like, should I complete this? And in my mind, I said, complete it, because even though you realize now at this stage, this isn't what you want, there'll be some other discovery. And what was interesting is I brought it up to the house and I showed it to Rachel and she's like, eh. She goes, what if, and then she crushed the, it was a two-sided box, basically. It's like two cigar boxes that close together on a hinge. And if I could describe it. And then she crushed it so that both the cigar boxes like fell into each other. So then it became tapered down to the hinge. So it was like this. And then she goes, oh, you know what would be a cool shape? This. And she pushed it together at the top. So they like tapered in and tapered. So it's like a, or what is that? The trapezoidal shape. If you look at the long side, the short side, rather. And then I instantly gave me a new idea, which is to lead to the next iteration of it. It might not be the solution, but if I didn't go through that on off all day long, laser cutting, testing. Now, all the various little bits and pieces might not collectively be good for that finish. All the little doodads that I learned how to go into the file on, what is the laser program called?
Lightburn.
I had to go into Lightburn and do some illustrative adjustments, which I don't like to do. And I always usually go back to Illustrator, but in Lightburn, I did a couple of new upgrades to the shape right there in Lightburn, which, like I said, is possible, but I personally don't like using that, but I did it. And so collectively, that experience will lead to several different things, not necessarily just the solution to this one design issue. And then when I come up with a final design that I'm happy with and that is practical and that is repeatable. That's the other thing too, is I made this thing that has eight rivets in it. So the whole time I'm doing rivets, they're in weird spots and it's difficult. And I'm imagining myself, if this is a successful design, I have to rivet this every single time. It's not fun. Could there be a tab and a slot like my traditional other bags? So you got to go through these processes. You have to see them through. Even if you know while you're working on it, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, I'm prototyping something for a future project. And, it involves electronics and I know nothing about electronics and I'm breadboarding the thing right now. And I see that, this whole thing is built into electronics because you breadboard something first. This is the first version. Nobody's going to see it. It doesn't matter. And then once you get it working, then you get to do the final thing. So just a thought that occurred to me that electronics has this built right into it.
Yeah. I think a lot of things can, if you just have that approach going into them. Modeling is the same way. I spent time yesterday modeling versions of this, knowing that it wasn't going to be how I did the final version, and because I actually didn't screen capture the modeling process, which I have to have for the video. And for another video that I'm doing with Autodesk. And so like I had to have screen capture of this, but I intentionally did not do it knowing that I will have to model it again. Even if it's right the first time, I'm going to have to model it again. So that will make it better. And so, I mean, you can decide, I think going into any of those things that like, this can't be the one. I'm making it so that this cannot be the final version. You know, the second one will always be better, even if it's exactly the same. The process is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that a lot with modeling, kind of scratch pad thing. So we were talking before this, and I said something about, you know, you were talking about perfection. And I mentioned sometimes we are in our own way. We're that thing about us that wants whatever it is we're doing to be good enough, to be final, to be perfect or whatever. And then that ends up causing problems, I think, for us a lot of times. Is that what's happening right now with your prototype perfection thing, where you are in the way of, or in general, you trying to do things at a higher level than they actually need to be done? Or like, what is that? What does that look like?
I saw a quote the other day and somebody posted on Discord and it just punched me in the gut. And the quote went something along the lines of, it doesn't have to be done. It just has to be perfect. And I was like, oh, come on. This is my life. I mean, this gets in the way of everything. I think things are going to be easy. And then we hit a little roadblock with something. And then that roadblock leads to, okay, let's figure this out. But also let's make sure we're doing it right. I mean, this is and not just video making. It's the projects. It's cooking dinner. It's like I am the reason things take so long is because I can't get over these little humps.
But at the same time, that has a lot to do with like, and everybody's different for this. And is the final thing the point, or is getting to this the point?
Well,
and if you decide that this thing is the point, then it doesn't matter how you get there. It doesn't right. matter how long it took you, what you invested in it, whatever. If you can't get here, you failed. Right. So, and I mean, the culture and especially like media is, you know, creative media is about the final edit, the final shot, the beauty shots, the thumbnail, the one indication that you did a bunch of work all crammed into this one final, here it is. But I mean, that's really a decision that we get to make as a creative person about, mm-hmm. you know, are we showing off the final moment, the final second of process, or are we showing off the process? I know that my final pieces are not usually very pretty. They're not refined enough that I really want to spend a whole lot of time on beauty shots. I don't have like a 10-minute sequence of like, look at all the beauty that I put into the thing. It's just like, oh, look, it does the thing it's supposed to do. Okay, bye, see ya. You know, because I don't have the details to show off. I know that about myself. And so I care a lot more about showing the process and the failure and the figuring out and all the stuff. And like I said, everybody's different in that. So that doesn't mean that I'm right in doing it. It's just how I do that. But all that to say, I think you can backtrack a bit and decide what it is that you're trying to show off. As an artist, you're probably trying to show off the final result, I would imagine. But what it is you're trying to show off definitely can help you decide, do I need to spend more time on this part or on this part? What do I need to share? Is it this part or is it this part? You know? And so, I mean, you can make those decisions and obviously based on what your goals are.
With the new guy, we're definitely trying to kind of plan a little bit more. And I think you're 100% right. That should be part of the planning. We're not just making a thing. What is the goal of this thing? Is it the end result or is it the process? And I think this thing in me, I think there's a point in my life where this all started, and it goes back to college, and I'm going to call out Dr. Jones. He was the professor, the lead in the graphic department at school. And he just pounded into our brains that the details matter. It was like presentation matters. When you had, back in those days, you had to turn in physical pieces of artwork and it had to have tracing paper over top of it to protect it, and it all had to be matted and framed in a certain way. And he's like, the details matter. And so that just stuck in my head. The details matter all my life. And I'm just now realizing the details get in the way of what really matters sometimes. And I'm trying to teach myself to reverse that a little bit. But yeah, well, I think it's Dr. Jones's fault.
I mean, maybe, but the details are context specific to like who you are and what you do, right? So if you think about process of building a home or building or something, the details for the engineer are, is it going to be safe? Is it going to be strong enough? That matters for them. That does not matter to the trim carpenter, whose details are, do I fill that gap or can I cut it closer so that I don't have to fill the gap? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's not like the detail is a broad thing. It is the minutiae and the very specific skill set that any person has to what they do. And so for you, the details may be the finish, the corners, the inlays, the beauty, the, you know, the design stuff. For me, it's like, did it do the simple thing that I wanted it to do? That's a detail. You know, can I weld this piece of metal back into the car? That's what I'm going for, you know? So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm saying that in that it would be really easy to brush that thought off as like, yeah, they get in the way, but maybe not. I mean, your details would get in my way. my details make it in your way. And that doesn't mean that either one of them are right or wrong. They're just, we have different details that we care about.
Well, it's also good to know where you are in the process. As I was saying yesterday, I glued up these leather bits and pieces. If it was a finished piece, I most likely wouldn't glue it because I'd be afraid the glue would leak out and show. And then you can't, like, you can wipe or sand away glue off of wood. When you get glue on leather, that piece is basically a gift for a friend. So yesterday in my iteration, talk about details, I glued it and there was a little squeeze out and I had to remind myself, this is the process. This isn't the finish. This is a means to an end. It's not the end. So who cares? So that was a way for me to keep moving through the process. But when I'm in my own videos or I'm doing something, you got to remember people don't see everything. If you're working for a client, it's a different story. But if you're working for a video or yourself, you can forego a thumb stain in the wrong spot. No one's going to see it. But if it was for a client, you'd make sure there's no thumb stain because they're going to examine it and flip it over. You don't want them to think that you're any less than professional. So the details matter, especially the details that show.
Yeah.
And it all depends on the client, the situation, the circumstance, the presentation. So you could really skip a lot of stuff or cut a lot of corners. Especially, you know, I'm also trained in the TV world where as long as it looks good on the camera face, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have to remember that for our YouTube as well. But again, there's always different parts where details matter.
Well, so
don't bottleneck everything by being like the detail perfect person.
Yeah.
There's a few people in my life that are like that. They're stifled because every detail matters. And one person in particular I worked with last week, I realized the bottleneck was him because every design decision, every attachment, every screw, every hole we drilled, he had to stop and think. And then I reminded him, I said, you're looking at every decision you make has a potential for total catastrophe. I was like, get out of that extreme world. Because every screw we put in, he says to himself, is this, what if the wood splits and then the wall falls down? What? I go, stop it. Collectively, this object we're building is all these different pieces, going to be a trade show wall. It's going to be fine. If this one screw pops out the side when no one sees it, take it out and put it in again. But then he'd be like, oh, wait, but now the wood is split. I'm like, who cares? Squirt some glue in it. Let's keep moving through it. And you got to figure out where it's time to move through it and where it's time to overanalyze. And like I said, this person I'm talking about is Ryan, of course. But there are other people in my life and students that I've encountered where every design decision is could mean catastrophic failure if you make the wrong decision. You got to get out of that extreme world. Some people are stuck in that. And catastrophic failure could mean falling off the wall with a bad hook on a heavy object, or it could mean someone says, I don't like this, I don't want to pay for it. That's the equal amount of catastrophic failure. Or in our case, sometimes nobody will watch it. But you got to get out of that catastrophic failure mentality where if this isn't in the right spot, and then you agonize over putting it in the right spot because you're afraid of catastrophic failure. Catastrophic failure hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
No matter what you do wrong.
That's true.
I think you've said that in other ways before. You know, the worst case scenario is almost never the most likely scenario or something like that. Yeah. I think I've definitely done that, which is different than what I just said a minute ago around the Karma Ghia. You know, working on the bodywork, I've spent so much time overthinking and worrying about, like, is this weld going to look good enough? And then I step back and I realize that the weld is underneath a car that sits like 6 inches off the ground. Like, nobody's ever going to see that unless the car's upside down. And if that's the case, then who cares, right? So I've spent a lot of time.
There's other problems.
Yeah, there are bigger problems. And, you know, so I've spent a lot of time overthinking how much those details matter in that context, because I've never done that work before. I want it, because I'm putting in a lot of work to it, I want it to come out and be something that I'm proud of and that can last past me, you know, and the car looks good for a long time and is drivable and stuff like that. But even still, like, the welds on the inside of the engine bay on the left behind the battery, like, who cares? Like, it doesn't even matter if it looks good. No one would ever see it if it was wonderful. So, yeah, I can say that I don't care about those details, but at the same time, I definitely do in certain situations more than I should. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on this type of stuff?
I mean, we started off with the phrase bottleneck. Are there other things that slow you down from progress besides details?
I mean, for me, yeah. For me, it's about not having enough, feeling like I don't have enough detail in my head to get something started. And it's like I am a box of contradictions. Like, I get it. I say one thing and then I act a different way, and then I act one way and I say a different. I do it all the time. But like with this metal die thing, this is just the most recent thing I've been working on. I could have started this last week. And every time I would start to think about it, it was like, well, I've got to figure out exactly how I'm going to voice the beginning of the video. And I need to be at the farm and I need to move this stuff out of the way so I can get a good shot of the car. And so I just can't. Yeah, I don't really know yet. And I would put it off. And then I would be trying to fall asleep and think, yeah, I've really got to figure out that the beginning of that video. And I don't really know. I'll think about it tomorrow. And I think I don't have enough information, or I don't think I have what I need on hand to really think. You don't need anything to think. And so I would just not do it. The whole time I'm pushing this thing off because I'm not sure how to think about the beginning of the video, which can be shot at any point. It has nothing to do with modeling dies for a piece of metal. I know what the metal looks like. I can model the die for the metal. And so my bottleneck is putting off the whole of a thing because I don't know how to think about a part of a thing. And I will put off the entire project when I could just be like nibbling at it a little bit here and there. I get this one part done, and then maybe that will inform how I talk about it in the intro, or maybe that will inform what I decide to do with the next, you know. So that's definitely a bottleneck where I want to have more of a plan to get started rather than just start. And that's totally contrary to how I do things in the house when Jenny and I are trying to make a decision about like the siding, for instance. I was like, let's just pick siding. And then if we don't like it, we can change it later. Like, it doesn't really matter. You know, we could do it. And she's like, well, the way Jenny is, she wants to see every potential siding ever and every color of every siding and look at them all on the house to make sure that we're narrowing it down to the best thing. But before we narrow, we have to expand out. And I'm just like, well, I don't know, let's pick one that we like, and then that's probably good enough. And if we need to change it, we can change it. So I contradict myself constantly in those two things. Like, sometimes you just jump in and just do it and fix it later. Sometimes you just don't start it at all until you can completely do it. So, yeah, I am a bottleneck.
Mm. Jimmy, you're a bottleneck. Tell us why.
Jimmy?
What's that?
Totally not paying attention.
No, your volume was really turned down, Bob. I have it turned because I'm afraid of the echo. I heard you said, I am a bottleneck. I am a bottleneck. Why am I a bottleneck?
Yeah.
I don't think that I am a bottleneck. It's usually everybody around me that's a bottleneck. I can quickly move through things, great. And it's maybe because I've been a freelancer my whole life, and I know that I have to move through. If anything, the bottleneck would be not selling things online well enough. Like, I sell my leather bags through Instagram, and the reason I sell my bags through Instagram is that I could temper the amount I have to make and the amount I have to sell. I literally handwrite every label. I pack every box myself. I get to a point where everyone's like, oh my God, how come I can't find them online? If they were online, I'm afraid they would sell too fast. And so there I'm bottlenecking and I'm throttling.
I'm afraid I'd be too successful.
In a way, because then I wouldn't be able to keep up with it. And then one of my biggest fears is having people waiting. Mm-hmm. I always want to be ahead of the wait with products available versus taking in 10 orders and then having to fill those orders. Because that to me is scary. That inhibits my freedom as a designer, having a wait list. And that's one thing I never really wanted was a wait list. So I always want to be ahead of it. And that's that when we were making the ice picks in the beginning, I'd wait till I sold 100 and then I'd make 100. I'd pre-sell 100 and then I'd make 100. And then I realized, let me just make 200. And then life became easier because I was always stressed out about fulfilling those orders. If someone gives me money for something that doesn't exist, it stresses the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait till it's done. This way I could abandon you and there's no ties to us. I could literally cut you loose. I could pretend I forgot. And then we have no argument. There's no lawsuits. That's why I never really, you know, I'll take half. If it's a big job, of course, I'll take half the money up front and then the next half. But with the smaller products like this, I always like to make sure it's done before I sell it. And so that could be a bottleneck.
One of my biggest thing that slows me down and getting prepared for future videos is I'm really impulsive, where I might have a whole list of things to do, to make, that I want to make or that I need to make, but it's the newest idea that I want to do right now, because that's the one, that's the shiny object. That's the thing that has my attention. I'm like, all right, let's make that right now. And then you realize, oh, sometimes it takes a full day to design a thing, or you have to order things and you have to wait. And then that waiting, that time makes the shininess go away. So then I got to figure out I just need to get more organized on paper or my notes or whatever and start planning out ahead. I'm so jealous of Jimmy's freedom of just, I'll just do what I want. I'm going to go out and I'm going to make a mailbox today. And then the video is out 2 days later. I'm like, are you kidding me? That thing is absolutely stunning.
You know why? Because I don't pre-sell stuff. That's why. That's really why. Like, it's funny. It was a day before Valentine's Day. My friend says to me, hey, did you sell a lot of bags on Valentine's Day? I was like, when is Valentine's Day? It's tomorrow. I was like, I didn't even sell one bag for Valentine's Day. I completely forgot about it. Completely forgot. I didn't sell one bag for Valentine's Day because I didn't promote it. But when I promote things, they sell. So when you see me promoting, you know that I got bills due.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, I mean, David, is there anything else that about you or about your process that you feel is a bottleneck, like something that, I don't know, you want to change, need to change, don't want to change, but know about?
I think it's mostly, it's just like, I want to be able to think about the future better than what I do now, instead of just worrying about what I'm going to do the next week or the next 2 weeks. I mean, you mentioned you have a video that you're working on for April. That's so far away. April doesn't even exist to me. The future is non-existent to me. Only the next deadline matters to me right now. And I need to get out of that mindset.
That's how
everybody has different process, obviously. And I know that you like notes on paper and stuff, but do you have a calendar, like a content calendar, even a rough one that you work on so that you can lay things out in the future? Do you have anything like that?
At one time I did. It's when I got into Notion and started learning how to use Notion. Mm-hmm. And the fun for me was learning how to use Notion, not setting up my future projects and categorizing them and having lists. And so as soon as I was done making that Notion template, I was over that project.
Gotcha. Huh. Interesting.
Became a project.
What were you showing?
I just keep lists. And when I have a vacant spot and I have a week where I don't have anything due, or if I don't think I might do a video, I'll just start digging through my old notebooks and find an idea like, oh, I forgot I wanted to make that. And then I'll jump into that. The mailbox just came literally out of nowhere. It's just like that morning or the day before I went to the mailbox and it was just packed with all the stuff that we bought. One thing I must correct, and I didn't know this, in the comment section, my box is always filled with UPS stuff. Apparently, only post office business can go in anybody's mailbox. Somebody's like, if the UPS guy's sticking stuff in your mailbox, that's against the law. I got a lot of those comments. I didn't know that. I don't see where they come from. I buy stuff on eBay all the time. Sometimes it comes UPS. A lot of times it comes post. So that's why I would always assume that the stuff in the mailbox is usually eBay stuff. And that's usually small things I buy, like belt buckle findings and stuff. And anyway, so I did not know that. But it is true that the post office is the only one that uses that mailbox. I noticed that since I posted the video. And where the mail woman would always come up to the house with big boxes, and I'd meet her at the door and I'd collect it from, I'd usually walk out to her car. And, but now she doesn't have to because the mailbox is big enough for her to stick all that stuff in there. So I was mistaken in thinking that it was UPS stuff and FedEx stuff getting jammed in the mailbox. I have a front porch, a back porch, a side door, a front door, and the mailbox. So all packages come to all things. I didn't realize there was a differentiation. So now that the mailbox is big enough, she's been jamming stuff in the mailbox, and there's plenty of room for more stuff. So if you UPS guys listening, Shane, if you're listening, you could stick stuff in my mailbox. I won't tell you.
But. I know I have all these problems, and I know every solution. I know all the things that I need to do. I don't need input. I don't need somebody else to say, you know what you should do is you should map this out on paper or Notion or in your notes. I don't need somebody to tell me that because I already know. I just don't
really
do
it. Personal. It's really right. A personal.
It's a person. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think meeting people in the community and other people that make things on or off camera, the biggest bottleneck for all of us, me less so because I've learned to deal with it, is perfection. It's the biggest problem. Like, how many people have we met at shows that go, I want to make this thing, but it, you know, unless I get the right saw or the right tool or the right camera or the right moment or the right, I got to get my hair cut. No, none of this stuff really does matter. You really have to just get into it. And if your initial project starts going bad, you say, okay, this is my reference point. Now I know where to make it better. So you could always just get started. Even if your first YouTube video is crappy, that's your reference point. You look at it, no one has to see it. You make your next one better than that one, or your console, or your bed frame, or your book binding, whatever it is. Everything you do could either be the finished project, or at one point it becomes the reference project. Which means now you got to iterate.
I mean, that lesson right there is so valuable. And that is a thing that is not taught in schools, or at least wasn't taught in my school. You were just taught the process.
Yeah.
And then you're not taught the hurdles that you're like, the big shock to me when I got out of college for graphic design was when you started working with clients, they ruined the design. You would make this thing, it was laid out all perfect. And then now the client wants 300 words in this cell sheet that didn't need to be there. Yeah. But now your layout's all broken. So you learn to cram a bunch of stuff in there and you have to let go of the design and
Yeah.
Those are things that weren't taught to us.
This got me thinking about something. This is a whole nother topic, so we won't go into it today, but I'll just save it.
Okay. I'm curious.
That's interesting.
But I will tell you just a little thing about this week that just came to me. This whole week long, I worked for Ryan. He was the point man. He was talked to the designers. He got the text messages. He got the schedule. I got nothing. And it was fine. Ryan offered me a couple of bucks to help him. And I said, sure. We built everything in my shops. We used my big CNC machine, everything. My name wasn't on anything. And he kept asking me, what do you think about this? I go, I don't care what we do. My name's not attached to it. I said, if my name was attached to it, we would already be done. I said, but it's not. So I don't care what happens. I go, I don't have any responsibility to this truck driver that's waiting. I don't have anything. And then at one point, Mike came and helped me. And helped us. So it was me and Mike and Ryan. But Ryan was in charge. And I said to Mike, I looked at Mike, I go, today we're day laborers. Don't get emotionally attached to anything. Don't get upset if things are going wrong. It has nothing to do with my company and you personally. I said, so we just following whatever. And he got it done. Ryan's always a little late, but he got it done. And he's a very good designer, very good builder, but he overanalyzes too much, which is why everything got slowed down. But as
Jimmy,
like,
when the views go away and you can't make videos anymore, life coach is your next job.
I'm going to get my certificate. And so the point of it all, that this is leading up to a joke. When we get plywood delivered because of the address, the plywood company always puts a sticker on the pile of plywood that says Duresta, so they know that forklift pile goes to my shop. And we were joking, Mike goes, your name's not on anything. He goes, there's a sticker on the back of the plywood over there that has your name on. And I went over to it and I scraped it right off. I was like, there. I go, I don't care what happens with this project. I go, I'll do my best to help you through this. Talking to Ryan, I was like, but it's on you. Of course it's on you. Everybody knew that. That was implied. I was like, phone calls, delays, hangups. We got stuff. I sent you guys pictures. There's big die cuts and handmade letters. Those all came from Manhattan. Yeah. They could have been come late. I have absolutely no stress attached to this whatsoever. I'm here to help you get it done. And that was such a sense of freedom. But the minute my name is associated with it, the stress level and the attention to detail goes way up for commercial jobs.
So, okay. I think what Jimmy is saying, David, is that you should create a new artist persona where you wear a mask and nobody knows it's you, and you do all your art under that. Singer. So your name is not associated with it. So it cuts down the stress of having, that's not what he's saying, but it would,
you know, funny. I think there is something to that though, because if you approach a project and you just say, I'm going to approach this project with that persona, maybe that's the trick to get you over everything that you're trying to get over.
That's why Kiss always wore makeup, just to have a different thing.
it really does help when you're anonymous.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts on this?
I think we could all do an experiment where we could build something that no one's ever going to see, never going to be filmed. And
my videos.
But that's funny. But in general, we should all do that. We're all listening. People build something that you're never going to show to your wife or your kids or anybody, and just have fun with it. Don't worry about it.
And that only gets harder and harder because we're all trained by social media to share everything that we do.
Yeah.
Look what I made for dinner.
Yep.
Yep.
Good advice. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters who are awesome and have supported us for a really long time in a lot of different ways. Like, we get a lot of comments from them, not just the money support, but we also get links and follow up and stuff every week. People send us things and I pass it on to whoever it's to, and a lot of suggestions, a lot of encouragement. So big thanks to everybody over at Patreon, especially our top supporters, because they do more than they need to, but we're really grateful. That is A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albert's Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Low End Design, Scott Data Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, and Works by Solo. But also, people like Matt Webb. Matt is a new patron. So, Matt, welcome. Thank you for supporting the show. And everybody at every level of support gets the after show. It's more, 15, 20 minutes of more podcast after this that you can only get through Patreon by going to patreon.com/makingit, sign up, and then you get the link for the podcast. You can listen to it on Patreon, or you can put that into your podcast player, or you can go watch the unlisted videos on YouTube and see more of us if you want to do that. So, that's patreon.com/makingit, and we are really, really grateful for all of you all. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being here. You guys got anything to recommend this week? Anything cool?
Jimmy, are you still looking?
Yeah, well, you know what? Just came up, and I can't say I watch him a lot, but I'm so impressed with Alex Steele, how he's moving into this host position and finding... I do watch them, but I don't watch them every single time they come out, and I always plan to. But I'm looking at... It just came out 4 days ago, how super hot... How super steels are made. And I just think it's amazing to watch him grow from just a guy in a shed with his power hammer. Obviously, he was always very accelerated, more than any one of us. But watching how now he's become so prolific and going and finding the source of all these things, and going to the shotgun factory and going to the leather bag factory and doing all this thing. I think it's a great evolution for such a talented person to really go back to the roots and find where and how. It's great. So Alex he just keeps expanding and growing, and
it's great. He's fantastic.
That's all.
So mine is, it's a long one. I'm only halfway through it, but it's from the AP, and it's a little mini documentary about the Simpsons. They've made 800 episodes, and I've probably only seen 100 or so episodes of The Simpsons, so I'm not like a huge fan, but I enjoy The Simpsons. But this little doc is good. It's an interview with all the people on the show, and it's...
You guys are both 10 years younger than me. Do you remember where The Simpsons started?
The Tracy Ullman show.
Tracy Ullman, yeah.
Tracy Ullman show, yeah. It was a big deal. It was a really big deal. And then when it broke out to its own show, I was at SVA at the time, and all the cartoon nerds were like, whoa, this is an amazing show. And then do you remember when the shirts became such a huge deal in the 80s?
Yeah.
Everybody had on a Simpsons.
90s. It was like, I would say the 90s.
Well, I was still at SVA. I graduated in 90, so I remember the shirts exploded, like 88, 89, 90. And I'm sure it passed into the 90s. That's when you guys were coming of age, remembering things. That's when your memory started to work in the 90s.
That's, yeah. And then in the 2000s is when I forgot everything.
Yeah, then the decline.
Have you guys been seeing this thing where it's people going around asking people that they work with, what year were you born? And then it says 2003. What year were you born? 19. And the minute you say 19, it shows them like churning butter. Have you guys seen these?
No.
I'll send
it. It's usually with a girl will walk around like a salon or wherever she's working. She's like, Jimmy, what year were you born? And the minute you say 19, it shows you like fixing a Model T. But if your birthday starts with 2, then it just moves on to the next person. Like, you're okay.
You're okay. I got a couple. One is, did I tell you about the guy that made the piano for his pet octopus a while ago?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that same guy, and I don't know his name, sorry, made a magnetically hovering guitar string guitar. So this video has been going around. You've probably seen it, but super strong magnets holding the strings in tension, but it's floating. And so he eventually got to where he can play the guitar with these strings not really truly attached to anything. It's wild. It is
wild. I think I commented on the video of like, anytime you make an instrument where you have to wear safety goggles while using it, is pretty punk rock, because it's dangerous, because these magnets are insanely strong.
Yeah.
That's a good pick.
Pretty interesting. And then the other one is just a show that is, it's 8 episodes on Disney Plus. It's called Wonder Man, and it's a Marvel show. But even if you're not into superhero shows, we're not finished with it. We have like 2 episodes left. It's barely about superheroes. Like, that's the context for it, but it's about actors, and it's just delightful. Like, it's just really fantastic acting, and it's mainly about these 2 people who become friends through this weird process, and it's just a really good show. So, you know, set the superhero part of it aside, because that's really a very, very small part of it. Go check it out. You guys got anything else? No, Jimmy's muted. No.
That's cool. It.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You got to tell them that you love them. You got to finish it. Okay.